Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're going to start today, but beginning with a bit of history. In the spring of 1812, a drawing of a dragon-like creature, with a forked tongue, was published in the Boston Gazette newspaper. Its body encompassed a stretch of land from near Boston up the New Hampshire border and then hooked left to the ocean. The parcel was a Senate district recently redrawn by what was called the Democratic Republican Party in an effort to disrupt the Federalist Party's stronghold on representation. And it worked. Three Democratic Republican senators were elected from that district that year. The lizard was named the Gerrymander, a combination of the words salamander and the name Elbridge Gerry, the then Massachusetts governor who signed the new district into law. Not surprisingly to you, fast forward 110 years and districts are still regularly getting redrawn in the Commonwealth based on census numbers. In fact, it's happening right now. On Beacon Hill. Legislators have given themselves until this Friday to have plans in front of Governor Baker with a big push to increase dramatically the number of minority-majority districts. And this could literally change the face of the legislature. Joining us now, State Representative Michael Moran. Representative Moran represents the state's 18th Suffolk District, including parts of Boston and Brookline, and is the chair of the House's Redistricting Committee. Representative Moran, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Representative Moran, what are some of the biggest changes that are coming with these redistricts? That's probably not actually a word, but you understand what I'm saying with these new districts. Give us a snapshot.
Yeah. Well, we've created 33 majority-minority districts, of which 10 of them are what I call Section 2 voting rights districts, where the majority in those 10 are either Black or Hispanic. We have eight Hispanic, where the Hispanic population is the majority. We have two where the Black population is the majority. But more importantly than that, we've done four of those 33 districts are actually incumbent-free. Chelsea has an incumbent-free district for the first time. The city of Chelsea is likely going to be able to have a councilor, have a representative from their city, as well as Lawrence and Methuen have an incumbent-free district, as well as Brockton and Framingham. All of those are majority-minority districts. Two of them are what I call Section 2 districts, and they're Hispanic. And all of those communities have the ability to elect somebody of their choice. Where, if you look at the demographics of those districts, you know it's likely that you are going to get somebody, a person of color, in those four districts,
so
which currently don't exist.
That's a lot of change. There's been a lot of advocacy, shuffling, working on this. There is a self-imposed deadline of getting the maps to the governor by the end of the day Friday. Will the legislature meet that deadline?
We've already passed the House redistricting bill. We did that earlier last week. And the Senate has to do theirs. Both of the bills have to go back and forth between the branches, and then we will put them on the governor's desk. As of right now, there is no action the House needs to take, but I'm confident that by the end of the week we will have those bills on the governor's desk.
So bear with me a little bit, because this is a complicated process, and I just want to make sure that I understand it and we spell it out for the listeners. So the state, House, and Senate each present and approve their own district map. So House for House races, State Senate for Senate races. Then the chambers approve each other's maps. After that, it goes to the governor. The governor has to sign off on all of it, but the governor might choose to make changes first as well. Is that about right?
Yes and no. This is no different from a bill, any other bill. It takes the same path. You're right about the Senate district, the Senate districts in the Senate originating in the Senate, but then the House also has to vote on those.
Right.
And the House districts originating in the House, but then the Senate has to vote on them, and then both of them go to the governor for his approval. He has the ability to veto or send back with language or changes, and we have the ability, like any bill, to then override him if we choose, or if we have two thirds of the members agree. I feel pretty strong about the House maps. We had 157-1 was the vote in the House. So I feel strong that the maps that we drew with the House will withstand any criticisms or any vetoes that the governor might have on those maps.
Are you anticipating criticisms from the governor?
I am not. No. Every member but one of the Republican caucus in the House voted for the maps. So I don't see the governor having too much problems with the maps that what the House put out.
Now, the House maps need to be in place by, as I understand it, November 8th, because the Constitution, the state Constitution, requires that people who would run to represent a district have to live in that district for a year. Is that going to cause trouble? The census numbers were late this year. This process has been delayed as a result, all, you know, sort of stemming out from the pandemic.
Well, I mean, you know, you look at the calendar, and today is the 27th. If the maps get over to him by Friday, that gives us, he has 10 days to execute his veto. That should give us enough time to have that overridden if he does decide to veto him. Again, I don't believe he will, because of the support that we got from the Republicans in the House. But I can't speak for the governor. You'd have to try ask him that.
Yeah, so I think, and then I'll let you go. But I think the piece I'm trying to get at is, you've got four incumbent-less districts. People have to live in a district for a year. When this is finalized, really will essentially affect who can and can't run in 2022.
Yeah, no, it will. It certainly will. I mean, right now, because of the census delay, this timeline was thrust upon us. We did our very best. It was challenging because there was issues of reprecincting that we had to deal with. There's issues of just getting the data and making sure it was correct and we were using correct data and putting it into our software and making sure that all the appropriate checks were put in place to make sure that we're 100% confident that the data we're using is correct. But, you know, like everything that we've dealt with in the last couple of years with COVID, a year and a half plus, you know, we've all had to make some sacrifices. And, you know, this process is no different than other sacrifices that people have had to make because of COVID.
All right. State Representative Michael Moran there of the state's 18th Suffolk District and chair of the House's Redistricting Committee. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
So as we said at the beginning of this conversation, redistricting this year has the potential to change the face of the legislature, bringing in new representation in districts where incumbents aren't running and creating more districts where the majority of the population are people of color. As an example, a decade ago, the U.S. 7th Congressional District was redrawn so that people of color were the majority. And in 2018, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley became the first black congressional member in Massachusetts history. Beth Huang is the executive director of the advocacy group Massachusetts Voter Table. She convenes the organization Drawing Democracy Coalition, which assisted in public outreach on redistricting. They've been active in advocating for these more representative districts. Beth, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great. Thank you for having me.
So Mass Voter Table has been advocating throughout the process. Reactions to where we have wound up. Do you find the districts to be in line with the feedback that you heard from communities during your public outreach?
All in all, we think yes. The creation of the four new majority, minority, incumbent free districts in gateway cities that have frankly been the hardest hit by COVID-19, Brockton, Lawrence, and Chelsea, really matter for increasing representation and racial equity in the House. And then in the Senate, where there are only two people of color who are members of the state Senate, we are increasing the number of majority-minority Senate districts from 3 to 6. Two of those do not have incumbents, and we hope with organizing and with good candidate recruitment that voters of color will have their choice of candidates for state Senate to perhaps double or more the number of senators of color.
I am chuckling inside, Beth, at this phrase incumbent free that both you and the state representative use.
I know.
Right? Because it's sort of like it suggests that one would be delighted to be free of such a thing, which and so, A, thank you for chuckling with me, and B, explain that a little bit more. I imagine what you mean is that incumbents tend to get reelected. So if you change the district, having a new opportunity for new representation is important.
Yes, absolutely. So actually, incumbency is the strongest in Massachusetts of all 50 states. We have some of the least competitive elections in the entire country. And so creating these districts that do not currently have an incumbent really allows for new people, first-time candidates, people who have been longtime leaders in communities but have not entered public office yet, to have a real chance at running for office, and for voters in those communities to have a real chance of electing someone of their own choice.
So let's pick a community. Let's say Chelsea, for the first time, would have one representative for the whole city rather than multiple representatives. Residents had long been asking for that in hopes that one voice on Beacon Hill would mean more resources for Chelsea. So first, how does fewer voices equate to more resources? And second, tell us what that could be for Chelsea on the ground. What's at stake there?
For sure. So think about a time that you are at a restaurant and you have two or three people serving your table. Sometimes you get more service, but most of the time you actually get less service. And so that is quite similar in these cities that have multiple representatives or represented by someone who is in charge of representing two or three different municipalities. It means that there is no one who has the sole attention or sole focus on that community. And so for Chelsea, a city that has been hard hit by COVID-19, that also has a large number of renters, immigrants, young people, crumbling public school systems, and more. Greater attention from a resident of or a longtime resident and leader of Chelsea serving as their state representative means that there's authentic representation of how the 111 bus needs better service, about how ESL. English as a second language students need more resources to thrive in Chelsea public schools. It means that renters who are on the brink of eviction have a real voice in the state house and authentic representation for things that their community deserves.
And how about political representation? I mean, Massachusetts is a heavily Democratic state. Redistricting can also affect the likely party representation. Are we likely to see a shift in party balance in candidates and outcomes based on this redistricting?
The Drawing Democracy Coalition was primarily focused on increasing representation of BIPOC communities, immigrants, low-income people, much more so than we were looking at the partisan balance. I imagine that the partisan balance will stay pretty similar in both the House and the Senate. There are some competitive districts in the state Senate, and I imagine that there are some in the House. But overall, we are much more looking at racial representation than we were looking at the partisan balance.
And Beth, last question for you. There's been a great deal of conversation at the local and national level about trust in voting, people feeling enfranchised, people being enfranchised. Based on the feedback you've received from communities, will this redistricting have the opportunity of increasing the sense of voter trust and enfranchisement in our electoral process?
I think the level of involvement in this redistricting process was superb. The transparency of the legislature in bringing in lots of public input at every possible time, whether it's the language hearings, the hearings in every congressional district, gave a lot of trust to community organizations that we were being heard. And so I certainly hope that with these new opportunities for greater representation, this will spawn this virtuous cycle of greater engagement and greater representation.
Okay. Beth Huang is the executive director of the advocacy group Massachusetts Voter Table. She convenes the organization Drawing Democracy Coalition, which assists in public outreach on redistricting. Beth, thanks.
Thank you.
So listening to all of that is WBUR State House reporter Steve Brown. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tiziana. I've been listening to parts of it because we've had some technical difficulties on my end where the conversations are going in and out, but I kind of have an idea what they were saying.
Well, and I know that it's been an interesting weather day and connectivity day for all kinds of people today, Steve. So I appreciate you sticking with us. You have been reporting on majority-minority districts with a focus on Brockton. Any reactions on what you were able to hear from either Representative Moran or Beth Hwang, and on where we are today as we come down to the final days of this process?
Sure. Obviously, the goal has been to increase diversity within the Massachusetts legislature. And there's a good chance with these maps that will happen. It may take some time, as I heard explaining about the 7th Congressional District. That took a while for Ayanna Pressley to represent that. There's also a desire on the part of the map makers to protect incumbents for the most part. There are a few exceptions, but that is also a goal that they have achieved through this. A lot of incumbents are not going to face any trouble, not going to see any big changes.
So I noticed that State Representative Moran was truly unruffled about anything having to do with deadlines. And yet there's been some real concern, Steve, that, with this tighter time frame, with the census numbers coming late, that this could bring us down to the wire. Is he just a fairly chill person, or is there really no reason to be ruffled about these deadlines?
I think there is a glide path right now for them to meet the deadline. The House has already done the heavy lifting. The Senate is scheduled to meet today. They've had some technical gremlins. They're still working in a hybrid fashion. So a lot of senators I've heard haven't been able to connect into the session. So they were supposed to start at 1:00. They haven't done that. They're recess subject to the call of the chair until they can work out all the bugs. But they're going to do that today. And by Friday, these will probably, I'm pretty sure, will be on the governor's desk. And as Representative Moran was saying, they kind of back-timed it. If it gets to the desk, the governor's desk by Friday, that gives them the 10 days, plenty of time for that November 8th. If they have to override a veto, which I don't think they'll have to do, but they don't want to leave anything to chance, they have the plenty of time and they will make it.
So, Steve, you are into this. You have been watching it. I know you find it fascinating. So, what's got you hooked and what are you looking to and for next in this process?
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the lines change. Just a block away from my house, I can drive down a street and I can go, the on my left hand side is one Senate district, on my right hand side is another Senate district. I kind of get into that. I love the maps and who's representing and who the people are that are in those districts. Are they in line with their representatives and senators, or are they kind of out of step? And so this should put things back to a certain extent in some cases. But some people, I know in my town, some districts are changing around, and I've seen some people say, "Oh no, I don't want them to be my senator or my representative. I want to stick with who I have." That happens a lot, and is happening in this. It'll be interesting to see ahead what they're going to be doing with the congressional maps. I don't think there are going to be any big changes there because we're not losing a district or anything like that, which we did 10 years ago, which made it far more complex. And I'm sorry, I'm just hearing the Senate here.
That's fantastic. Talk about being right in the moment.
In order. I've got three computers up here, and one of them just started yelling at me. So the Senate is now starting to do that. So maybe I should go and watch that and see what's going on. But yes, I think that they will meet their deadlines. It's on a glide path to get this to the governor's desk by Friday, and everything should be all tied up with a nice, neat bow by the 8th of November.
Well, Steve, love talking to you in the moment. WBUR State House reporter Steve Brown there. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiziana.